This is the Goalkeeper Roundtable, hosted by Dr. Bill Steffen, with Jeff Shook, George Costellas, and Dave LaTourette. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Goalkeeper Roundtable. In this episode, Carl Spratt pulls up a chair to chat with the boys. Carl is the director of Academy Goalkeeping with the New England Revolution of Major League Soccer. Carl will be entering his 13th season with New England, and with that comes an unbelievable volume of experiences he shared with us. On top of his work with the Revolution, he also works with the goalkeepers at NCAA Division I Providence College of the Big East Conference. Sit back, enjoy the discussion with Dr. Bill, GK, Shooky, Lotto, and the Carl.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, whatever. Welcome to the Goalkeeper Roundtable. Today we have Carl Spratt from the New England Revolution, who is the director of the Goalkeeping Academy, and we'll be bouncing questions off of him. So, Carl, these are the boys.
Good to see everyone. Well, appreciate you guys having me.
All right. I you come to us, and again, George is kind of like was the link to you, and he's given us some really good questions here. So, I think the first one is kind of like big and broad. So let's start with that, and then maybe if we go narrow, more specific from there. But what are some of the trends? And we can speak in kind of two directions, but one is in goalkeeping as a whole. And obviously, you know, we'll talk about the block, K, starfish, save, whatever. But yeah, also, I think in terms of training for youth goalkeepers, trends you see or, you know, that are both good and bad that you see in goalkeeping today.
Sure. I mean, first of all, as I said, I appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to be a part of this. I've been a fan of the previous episodes, really like the style of conversation. So hopefully I can contribute somehow. But yeah, listen, I think for me, like I'll start off on a positive note. I think the trends that I'm seeing, you know, since my role with New England, this is my 11th season, is I'm really engaged and happy to see that there's more kind of thought process from the goalkeepers that we're seeing. You know, I think the position now is really identified, not just by goalkeeper coaches, but non-goalkeeper coaches, as it's a real specialist position. You know, it's not just simple stand in the goal, make a save. You know, there's a lot of nuances to the position. So the thought process that the players are taking right from the start of our first kind of contact is a real positive for me. The player's ability and understanding that they need to have a good ability in possession, I think, is a real positive. Again, just to, as the position kind of develops and there's more media on people like Edison and Neuer being out there engaging, like really initiating themselves, finding moments to initiate themselves into the game, the ability for goalkeepers to be good in possession is really important. And I think overall, there's more, just more attention to the position, right? Like we're getting kids now who, when I first started working with the Revs, you know, I would ask a simple question as to who's your favorite goalkeeper, and they honestly couldn't give me one. You know, now I'm getting kids 8, 9 year old reeling off 5, 6, 7 goalkeepers, and it's really, really good. So the trends for me is just the attention and that the position is getting. And then everything else kind of peels off from that, you know. But with the attention, the position, people start peeling back the layers a little more. And then obviously you have things that, because of all the media and the social media kind of output of the position, you look at things like, you know, the 1v1 situation is a negative trend for me in the game. You know, when I first came here and I was introduced to GKN and Tony and you, Bill, at some of the coaching schools was, you know, understanding the or categorizing the three different moments from a goalkeeper can look at a 1v1. You know, goalkeeper can win it, it's going to be a 50-50 situation, or the attacker has the advantage. And that was how it was kind of taught through the coaching schools, right? But now everyone wants to block, you know, no one wants to smother, or no one wants to create a 50-50 situation. Everything's stop and automatically give up the attacker's advantage and now see what they can do and see if they can emulate some of the goalkeepers on TV. A trend for me is in coaching, and I've really, you know, forced myself, who's someone who was heavily focused on technique when I first started coaching. Now I'm kind of leaning towards effectiveness over technique, you know, and I think some of the goalkeepers, they come into the school and our first contact or even in our academy, they look really good technical Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then they get into a game and, well, that doesn't look like how it did on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So why is that? So now it's like, okay, well, that's my fault as the educator, right? So from sort of the player's fault, I'm the one that's giving them information. So the technique versus effectiveness, I think, is a real kind of important trend that's going on right now. And I put it in my negative column, but I think it can kind of toe the line pretty easily. And then for me, just because everything now is goalkeepers want to, because they're good with their feet and there's a level of importance put on it, everyone wants to build out the back now, you know, everyone. So for me, there's not too much bravery in possession now for goalkeepers. Everyone wants to play to the four or the five or play to the two and the three. Well, there's nothing wrong with hitting long and trying to, you know, and so being brave to like initiate something quick, you know, oh, let's get the ball down and roll it to my four and now support underneath and play the other side. And, you know, and there's absolutely styles of play that warrant that. But for me, like, I love a goalkeeper who sees an opportunity and think, what the heck, I'm going to do it. You know, who's brave in possession and just conform to the norm, you know?
Now, we've talked about that in one of these, I forget, you know, how many one of these it was, but, you know, I've worked a lot with Anson Dorrance, and Anson would always say, your first option is there. Mm-hmm. And if it's not on, then, you know, you broaden your vision. But if you can play that ball, you play that ball. And so I think you're right in terms of, sometimes we tell them, no, you have to look sideways first. And it's no, you don't look sideways first. You look forward first. And if it's not on or if it's too risky, yeah, then you're going to broaden your vision. Yeah. And I think that's something that, again, as you pointed out, when kids see that, I think they feel like, no, I always have to play it to my wide backs, dropping in, you know, things like that. George, you had something.
Well, it has me think about the relationship between the goalkeeper coach and the head coach. So, Carl, with that being said, because I'm such an advocate of the ability to initiate the attack and to obviously bypass as many lines as possible. So I'm just curious, how much discussion do you, or the influence do you have with the coaches on that aspect of distribution? Do your goalkeepers have that luxury or the, you know, the ability to hit that long ball, or must they play out of the back?
I think our go-to would be, you know, we want, because at the academy, and again, like at an MLS academy, we're not really looking to, the emphasis for us is not on the team, right? I'll be honest. We're an MLS program. We're trying to get players to play in Gillette Stadium, right? So a lot of our focus is on the individual.
Yep.
That works to my and our advantage, I feel, as a goalkeeper, because now that individual needs to have a full variety in their toolkit, right? So when we speak to our coaches, Coach Scales is the director of the academy and our Coach Arena with the first team. And Coach Scales is really, really adamant that we kind of, you know, break it down into three components, right? Where we're working on the individual, we're working on the competitor, and now we're working on the performer. And I think, you know, when we're talking about like giving goalkeepers the autonomy to make decisions, as long as they understand the pros and cons and, you know, is the situation right? Like Coach Scales, we're not just, listen, take it from me, we're not just getting the ball at the top of the box, everyone up and in and just whacking it, you know? But in the correct moment, our guys have complete autonomy to play, you know, into the two and the three when it's low, into the two and the three when it's a little hot further up the field, or now looking to go above the pressure and beyond it. So yeah, that's part of our game model as we break our phases down, which have been heavily influenced, you know, with Scalesy going on that the French elite formation course that MLS introduced 7 or 8 years ago. So our game phases are very heavily influenced around that component. But yeah, no, listen, our goalkeepers and our goalkeeper coaches are constantly talking about, you know, how can they be more effective understanding that we don't really want our goalkeepers being the playmakers, right? I think that's really important. Mm-hmm. But, you know, can they facilitate situations, right? And I think that's really, as you get up the age groups, it's a really difficult thing to coach, right? Is having the goalkeeper not, hey, everyone, look at me, you know, but there's a time when they need to look at you because you've got the ball in your hands and you've got possession. So
love it.
Yeah. No, good. Good. Lotto, is that you waving or are you stretching?
Yeah. No, I'm trying to hold Patrick's hand. But one thing I really appreciated that Carl said that I don't know if we've really touched on it or how much the rest of us use this is that really educating our goalkeepers, not only our goalkeepers, but our players as well. Cause I know I do some of this within our non-traditional season is talk about the decision-making and the repercussions of the decision-making, you know, where they may ask you, well, what's wrong with this decision? Or what if I do play it here? I think there's nothing wrong with giving them the responsibility, but making sure that they understand the positives and the negatives, you know, and the outcomes of, you know, of those decisions. And when our players are young, we've discussed it before, but we have to let them make mistakes. We have to let them make mistakes. And hopefully to the point when they make a mistake and then they come off the pitch or they turn around and look at us as the educators, and we don't have to say anything because they've coached themselves and they know exactly what they've done right or wrong.
Yeah. I think a lot of your points are good because I can remember a specific instance with a goalkeeper at UNC, very good actually, woman goalkeeper, Kelsey Kearney. And she played a ball. It was probably like a 35, 40-yard ball to a wide midfielder who's open, got the ball, but then it's like, you know, turned it over because there was no help. And I just said, why'd you play that ball? No, because she was open. Yeah, but what was she going to do with it? Which is, that's the next level of thinking.
Right.
And so for her, that was very, you could see the wheels turning, going like, oh, I can't just look to see who's open. I actually have to, you know, think about, okay, when I do play to you, what are you going to do with it? Are you going to, you know, eat it? Are we going to turn it over because you don't have any help? What are we going to do with it? So I think those are the kind of things that I think, Carl, you're talking about, is that kind of trying to raise the decision-making ability or the levels of thought that go into a decision.
Yeah, no, like we do a lot of kind of video and review, right? And I'm a little old school, right? I have the guys keep a performance journal, right? All of our goalkeepers keep a performance journal and we provide them the tape. So it's almost, I know Bill, when I was listening to you and Jason, you talked about the benefits of notational analysis, right? And just talking about the importance of that. And just when we do that, especially for the goalkeepers coming into our program, everyone, you know, get the stats, completed passes, areas of the field, you know? So I categorize for our younger age groups, especially a completed pass is not just A to B, but it's A to B, knowing that B can actually connect to C. Right. Because yeah. And that relates to your example. Yeah. Right. So it's, yeah, you might see something, but is it the right moment? Was it the right situation? Was it the right moment in the game? All these things come into play. So when we get to the 15s, that kind of category drifts off a little bit. But from our younger guys, the completed pass stat, it's not just A to B, you know, it's giving B a chance to complete it to C. So, yeah, we do a lot of that. But the performance journal, I think, is really important for goalkeepers. Listen, I keep one as a coach's journal. I grade myself. How was my session? And I think you can always count on two hands the amount of sessions that have gone exactly as planned, right? I think always things that change. And I think, and I say that to players. And I you know, maybe it's some people say do it, some people say don't. But I'm a huge fan of humility, you know? And if I get to the players right at the start and say, listen, fellas, like, I'm going to make mistakes too. Like, I'm not going to crush you guys for making them. As long as you are engaged, as long as you're, you know, giving me your 100% attention, you're really thinking about what you're doing. Like, it's youth development in me, you know. I'm looking to develop players. I'm not looking to use players. So I think,
Billy,
that's an important
trait. Point, you know, Billy, you talked about, you know, what you asked her why she made that pass. And it's similar to when you work with outfield players. And some kids are focused on what they're going to do when they receive the ball. What foot do they receive it with? What part of the foot they receive it with? Where are they going to turn it to? Where the better players are already beyond that. They're like, they know how they're going to receive it, but they're
they already know where they're going to play it. And the player beyond that knows that where's the second ball going to go, and et cetera, et cetera. So I think as goalkeepers, it's, we have to have that same sort of outlook.
One of the things that I'm just, again, a little bit out of the blue is to ask Carl, because I'm thinking in terms of things, but just give me a quick answer and then I'm going to tell you why I was asking this question, if that makes sense. How much do you have the goalkeepers play as field players in just like a small sided game or things like that? Do you have the goalkeepers doing that?
Yeah, every day.
Good. Because the reason I was going to say is because one of the things we'll talk about are a little bit more, I don't know, concrete, maybe tangible. But I think of times when I just would know, okay, you know what? I'm just going to stand on the ball for a second. I'm just going to slow the tempo down because we need to, you know, maybe we've been under a bit of pressure. I'm just going to hold the ball a little bit. Let us collect ourselves, take a breath, get organized, and now we can attack versus, okay, now I'm going to get it, and now I'm going to play quick. And I think that kind of understanding develops as a goalkeeper has that experience that you are, I'm glad you guys are providing, so they kind of understand the flow of the game. And I think that's a difficult thing to discuss, but a difficult thing to throw, you know, just to throw that out there.
One of the other reasons we do it, guys, is because like we emphasize the ability for a goalkeeper to have disguise is disguising their pass in terms of not making it predictable, right? Because we're looking to create a time advantage as a goalkeeper to facilitate an attack. So if a goalkeeper would always receive it across his body and take a touch and play it out the other side, well, if you do it that, the higher level you get, the defending team starts to read that and then they shift their zones and everything goes on based on that, right? But if a goalkeeper can add disguise and how they orientate their body, where that first touch goes, what type of pass, whether it's going to be into, away, over the pressure. Having them in these small-sided activities really helps them create tempo, which you talked about, Bill, but also disguise, right? And I think that that's a really important trait that I feel doesn't really get talked about a lot, but we think it's hugely important for a goalkeeper in possession to have.
Cool, good. This is very, very good. I think it's good for coaches to hear this kind of thing. Carl, I'm going to digress a little bit, but perhaps it might be good for the people in the audience just to know what exactly are your responsibilities with the Reds? What are you responsible for? Obviously goalkeeping, but all goalkeeping, what levels, what, you know, et cetera.
Yeah, so my title is, again, for whatever a title is worth, right? My title is Director of Academy Goalkeeping. My first contact point is all of our regional development schools, right? We have goalkeeper regional development schools, which provides supplemental training. And every single one of our goalkeepers for the last 5 years and going through has graduated out of our regional development school. It's not a tryout by no means, but it's a way for us to see them and them to get used to us, our teaching styles, you know, our certain methodology, certain, you know, technical components, which we place value on. So that's my first, and then all the way up. And we have another goalkeeper coaching the academy as well, Coach Charis, who for the last 2 years has worked with our older age groups. I had always worked with our older ones, right? But I know speaking to Coach Scales a lot, and I've worked with Scalesy now for coming up 12 years. Mm-hmm. He's a big component of, you know, your coaches with more experience or, you know, an acute eye should be working with the younger players, right? So I took a step down age groups 2 years ago now and started working with our 14s and 15s, and it's challenged me as a coach, but it's really enjoyable, right? Because now I can feel confident as the director of goalkeeping saying that these guys are moving through the age groups, and if they're not able to do something by it gets to 16, 17, well, that's on me, you know? So that's the accountability for me that I always try and put on the goalkeepers and make sure we're staff are doing it too.
Good. No, that's very good because, again, one of my problems with coaching education is we develop kind of diagonally. It's like, okay, you're a good youth coach, so you're going to be a high school coach. Good high school coach is going to be a good college coach. Rather than saying, like, look, you're a good under 10 coach, let's make you an expert under 10 coach. Rather than just move you up ages and levels, why not make you an expert at that one designation, so to speak? Lotto, I think you had something.
I wanted to ask a question about, and I was going to start it with, you talked about the goalkeepers making decisions, you know, in terms of being, we don't want them to be predictable, receive from the left, open it and play to the right. And we saw it yesterday in the Man U game. You know, Henderson gets his start over De Gea, and in his one of his first moments, he gets played a ball deep, you know, in his box and probably inside of his six. He opens it to his right, predictably, and you could see as soon as the touch came how the pressure came from Sheffield United, and put him under pressure, dispossessed, you know, little scramble, goal gets scored. And there's a couple of pieces there too where he probably could have played it back to where it came from. He could have played the ball quicker when he received it, but he also got put in a really bad position by that ball being played to him, which that ball didn't have to get played back to him. So that's just, you know, parlay there. But in that situation, is he has to recover from that early to be able to play the rest of his 80, 88, 87, whatever the minute the goal was scored. So the question really is around resiliency. And I thought he was, the rest of the match, I thought he was very good. I didn't watch the whole match, but I watched chunks and pieces of it. But the reports that I heard that ever, you know, after that quote mistake, he was really good. So in terms of resiliency, we talk about it here. We want our goalkeepers to make mistakes and we want them to figure some stuff out, because I've always said as a goalkeeper, we have to have a certain amount of amnesia. And I try to train that within sessions. If a kid gets beat, I go, you can think about it all you want, or you can move on from it and make the next save or deal with the next moment. So maybe you can elaborate or reflect on how you put that into your sessions or build that into sessions as sort of a deliberate component of learning.
Yeah, I love that word. So I talked about our three kind of categories of youth development: the person, the player, the competitor, or the performer. There's traits associated with each of them, and there's only one word that repeats and through the person, the player, and the competitor, and that word is resilient. That's one of the, it's the trait that repeats through all the age groups, all the different stages of learning. And I think as a goalkeeper, that mistake management is so, so important, you know. And I love the way you put that, the amnesia, because I think the design of the training session is important too. You know, you talked about the technique versus effectiveness. The younger guys, you know, they start to train the exercise, which is what the coach has given them, and train the save, which is what the ball gives them. Well, if the coach says ball goes from A to B, then B is going to shoot. Well, then there's no need for them to really think outside the box, and because they know the sequential kind of area that's going to happen, right? So multiple different outcomes, I think, is really important how we train it. And then ultimately just the communication piece for us guys is no one makes mistakes on purpose. You know, and in a game, yeah, some mistakes are more costly, but like I try not to overcomplicate that communication with the goalkeepers and say, listen, like you're never going to see me on the sideline at a game or in a training session with my hands in the air saying what the, you know, because I know these guys aren't making mistakes on purpose. Right. So I feel, and again, whether it does or it doesn't, but I feel it sets them at ease right from the start. And then the training design, giving them multiple different outcomes, making sure it's as game realistic as possible, it just continues to build that, you know. And yeah, listen, you review it, and that ability to self-evaluate, you know, their performance in training sessions or games is important. That's a huge trait of a aspiring elite development goalkeeper, is the ability to look at themselves and think, hey, what did I do? Not cast aspersions on guys in front of me, but what could have I done better? And therefore you're able to, you get a good idea of, you know, the personality of the player. And now as a coach, you become that, you know, educator role, is not helping them get better at said thing, but helping them overcome, you know, hurdles that are put in their way throughout their pathway. And that to me is a really important part. But again, just to hear you say the resiliency, it's the one trait that repeats through our categories of development. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's important for the kids, because again, I don't know if I'd say amnesia, but because you want to, the sports psychology term is selective forgetting. In other words, I'll forget this for now, but I'm going to come back, because the worst thing is, forget about it. Don't worry about that bag. Oh, forget about it. No, I'm not forgetting about it.
Forget about it in the moment.
But we're going to park it, park it, and I'll come to it later, that kind of thing. Jeff, I thought you had something.
Yeah, Carl, I'm curious, can you share with us how many goalkeepers you are responsible for, and at what age do you guys start to identify goalkeepers? You mentioned 14 and 15. Is that the actual youngest? And then if you could, how long do you have these goalkeepers in, and how frequently do you get new goalkeepers?
Yeah, so our youngest academy team as of this year is the U14. So we don't have a U13 team. The organization decided to move away from the U13 age group. Younger than that, we have Alliance clubs that in and around our area that we have really good relationships with. A lot of those Lions clubs, you know, give us permission to bring their goalkeepers into our regional development schools, which we have them as well. So there's a trust factor there right away. I communicate with all those goalkeeper directors on a consistent basis, and we get a real good handle. We invite those goalkeeper directors into our club, and they're able to observe our training sessions and sit in our classroom sessions on their nights off. So the communication and relationship is good. But from a goalkeeper standpoint, we have 10 goalkeepers from U14s to U19s. We are heavily on the younger side of the age group because we always encourage our goalkeepers to play up. So in the double berth years, we only have one goalkeeper who's going to always graduate up, and then we'll have three goalkeepers below them, knowing that one of those guys can play down, two of them have got two more years left in the cycle. So 10 goalkeepers in the hole. As we train 4 days a week. The goalkeepers train with their coaches every single day. For the younger age groups on a Wednesday, they will do 75% of their session with the field players. So on a Wednesday, it's a lower workload, goalkeeper specific workload for the younger guys. At the start of the session, you know, in terms of the activation and the small side of games, all the goalkeepers are included into the field players right from the start. So when you ask Bill how often do the goalkeepers insert themselves into field player activities, every day that's how we do it. And obviously there's certain things, you know, we've all been victim of a coach going, "Hey, I need the goalkeepers now." I'm like, okay then. Yeah. Didn't really plan around that, but you know, but so there's always things that are going to happen. But yeah, every day the goalkeepers get some, you know, a minimum, you know, of kind of a 40 to 45 minute block with our goalkeeper coaches. But that session is heavily tied into when we plan our periodization out from the year, is heavily tied into what the tactical periodization falls on with the field player coaches too. So, listen, we always want more. We always think we need more, but sometimes more isn't the best thing for the player, you know? So having that day where they can just jump in and be with their buddies and just work on things like disguise and timing of passes, I think it's a really valuable part of it.
Carl, I applaud you guys for holding back on the urge to generate more income by starting them at younger ages, but I think it's to the player's benefit. Your strategy is to the player's benefit.
Yeah.
George, you had something.
Carl, I'm assuming those regional developmental goalkeeping schools, is that where you guys do a lot of your identification?
That's where the goalkeepers that we've identified would get invited to. You know, that's a paid program. So that's part of our commercial, the Revolution Academy commercial side. But it's a 8-week program, 1 day a week, an hour and a half specific goalkeeping. So it's a really good first step for those goalkeepers who want to test themselves to see if, you know, they can perform in a little bit higher structured environment. But also when we identify goalkeepers from our talent ID guys and our scouting networks to say, hey, listen, so-and-so has popped up on a radar, I think it doesn't do the player any benefit to have that said player jump right away in with the academy team, you know, because that might be, you know, I think the worst thing you can do as a coach is take a snapshot, because said player might have a really good session or might have a really bad session. Neither would be a true reflection of who they actually are. So for us to get a little bit more information, not only about the player, the person, you know, their family, by having them come into our regional development school is really beneficial for both parties. And then if, you know, we've had players come in session one, you see right away, yep, he doesn't need to be here. Mr. Costellas, here's your full refund. And then away you go, you know, you're now in our, you know, more structured kind of team pathway. But I think that's a really, everyone loves a refund, especially right now, right? But for me, I think like those regional development schools, it's, and here's the other thing. And we're not a youth soccer club, right? Like, I'm not having goalkeepers from A, B, C, and D club come in, and I'm not trying to pinch them or steal them or tie them away. It's a supplemental, you know, training environment where the goalkeepers can, and the families and the coaches of these kids can just say, listen, this is a just supplemental to what we're already doing, you know?
Cool. Very cool.
Love it, man. Love it.
Yeah. If you do manage to, let's say, absorb those goalkeepers, are there things that you see as a, perhaps as a trend or something you feel like you need to work on as a point of emphasis, maybe as opposed to having an evenly balanced curriculum? Is there anything that you feel you see currently that is becoming either a strength or a weakness in their development when they reach you that you need to focus on?
Three things that kind of come to mind is, you know, personality of a goalkeeper and their willingness to open their mouths and talk to the people around them. You know, like to make it as subtle, like I say to the young guys, if you don't know what you're saying, just say what you see, right? Just say what you see. You know, George, man on your right. 9 times out of 10, you saying what you see is going to be, for the younger guys, is going to be the right information. If it's not the right information, well, now at least you're getting them outside of the comfort zone. So we hugely implore young players to talk, you know, and then you talk about, there's a difference between shouting at someone and shouting to someone, right? And obviously how the two different ways of communicating and the cadence of what you say can have a positive or negative effect. But yeah, the personality and the willingness or the lack of willingness to communicate with the guys around you is something that we work heavily on. The mindset of a goalkeeper, I'm a huge component of try and catch the ball, you know, like catch yes, what sir. You can catch. Like good. I'm not good. You can't go parry and then think, oh, I can catch that. You know, you just can't do it. Whereas you can go, I'm going to try and catch it. Holy crap, that's coming a little bit faster than what I think it is. Let's get it away from you, right? So it's the mindset of a goalkeeper, that catch versus parry mindset. And then the training habits. So one thing we are so, so huge on is, and we've done this when we used to go out and work the US soccer training centers. And you'd guess the coach would, you know, be the guest, the goalkeeper would be the guest coach with the US soccer staff at the location. I always like them. They're not my goalkeepers, right? So I'm not going to try and coach them. I'm going to just put them in an environment and I want to see what they are, see what they're capable of. And you can see the goalkeepers who are in an environment where their goalkeeper coach is doing all the serving. Because you ask a kid to volley a ball, half volley a ball, clip a ball into the hands, and they'll look at you going, me, you know, whereas so that training habits I think is so important. You know, like the players are not going to get any better if I'm the one serving the ball, you know. So like I tend not to do a lot of serving. It's all about the players, because the pace of their pass, the cadence of how they strike a ball is more relative to what they're going to see, as opposed to a 38-year-old man doing that, you know. So
I feel like Carl's trying to interview to be on the goalkeeping roundtable.
Come on, girl.
Hey, listen, if you guys will have me, I'll be there, no problem.
No, this the reality is this is a couple of those points of the things we've talked about, and I brought it up early, and I know Shuki has talked about it. Like if we have to strike a ball, I'll strike a ball. Originally this came from when I first started it, I'd had a knee surgery and I couldn't strike a ball. And I sat back and made the goalkeepers. I'm like, wait a second, this is making my goalkeepers better. Because now they're striking X amount more balls a session.
Yeah.
And it's making me better because I am seeing things in a much different fashion as far as timing and rhythm and set position that I can't see if I'm striking a ball. So if I'm dealing with a goalkeeper 1v1, fair enough. But I think we as educators, if we as goalkeeper coaches, we have to find ways, like if you have 10 or 11 or 12 or younger kids that are training, you have to find a way that they can serve each other and make mistakes serving and make mistakes as goalkeepers, because it's making everybody better in the process.
It's an ego thing for coaches too, right? Like to swallow your ego and go, ah, oh man, like this kid is not hitting the ball and my who's watching? Does my session doesn't look good, you know?
Exactly.
Like, it's like, it's not an easy thing. Like, it really isn't, but it's something that even in our youngest level, that having them, you know, my pet peeves, hitting dead balls, you know, hitting a live ball, you know, like, but then being able to manipulate the balls too, you know, it's, and not saying, talked about that, you know, that session design, like multiple different outcomes, like the ball's going to come from here, but I'm not going to tell you where it's going to go. You know, all of a sudden you're still coaching the position. Are they getting in line with the ball? Do they need to, you know, drop deep, give themselves a little bit more time to see it on their touch? Do they need to come in, engage the attacker? Can they affect the moment? Where the ball's going to go? Like, I'm not really too concerned. It's what you've done prior to the shot being taken.
Yeah, we've talked actually just a bit about your first point about communication. We talked about how important that is, and I know I've mentioned that's probably one of the hardest things to coach. Mm. I'd much rather, okay, here's how you dive, boom, diving technique, boom, no problem. But okay, I've got to get you to talk, and that's one of the hardest things for us, I believe, to coach.
100%.
Yeah, George, what did you have?
Well, I just wanted to go off of two things, and it's difficult because as a coach, you know the importance of demonstration. So the ability to demonstrate something kids relate to, but at the same time, when you're developing players and you're constantly having to serve, it's because you want the quality to be high. You know what I mean? So you're in that dilemma, but at the same time, long term, you know how important the development of those players are. So they need to be able to strike a ball. They need to be able to throw a ball. They need to be able to perform these skills. And, you know, it may come off ugly in the beginning, but long term, I think there's that benefit. Or I know there's going to be that benefit. But just on that last note, Billy, I think I'm curious from Carl, because, you know, you're now probably, if not every guest has touched on it, how the inability to communicate effectively. So I was just wondering, what are you doing to facilitate them communicating more as goalkeepers?
So this is a timely topic on our end, because you're coming up to the holidays, right? And most often than not, you're in a room with friends and family, right? So I wasn't a good communicator when I was at school, when I was 12, 13, playing academy football. And I actually took a performing arts class at school, much to the critique of all my friends at the time, when a 13-year-old guy goes and does drama. But it really helped me, you know, get out of my own mind, you know, just to be able to project my voice and the intonation and the clarity of what you say. And so I tell these guys a lot, like, over the holidays, I would like you to give a toast, to give a little speech in front of your family, you know, like, do a, in school, when I speak to the high school level kids, like, enroll in a public speaking class, you know, like, if you really want to get better at something, you'll find ways to do it. But I love this time of year, because years upon years now, I've had messages from, and we don't really engage with parents. Like, I honestly don't. I have maybe one, two conversations with a parent of an athlete over the course of a year. But that, I can guarantee one of those conversations would be, hey, Coach Brad, just so you know, so-and-so and so-and-so stood up on Christmas Day or Thanksgiving or Christmas, and he gave a toast, and the room was shocked. I didn't know what was going on.
I love it.
But just finding ways to do it, right?
Toasting with an appropriate beverage for a 14 or 15-year-old.
Yes. Skim milk, not whole milk.
Just to cover our base.
But just finding ways to encourage him. But yes, and any performing arts thing, any performing arts opportunity, public speaking class, finding ways to give thanks or express, you know, how nice it is to be around your family. All these little things will help, you know. And I've spent time helping a goalkeeper prepare for that moment. You know, like, I don't know their family. I don't know what their holiday season is looking like, but I can help them put together, you know, a general script, and then listen, I want them to learn that script, and then I want you to say it, right? And all right, that's helping them just get out of their mind, you know, when it comes to that type of thing. But little things like that, I think, is has helped
very good.
Absolutely.
I probably shared here goalkeeper we had at Oregon, Sarah Peters, who had a great bill for goalkeeping. She was very solid technically, stuff like that. But she's like quiet, like a church mouse. And I would tell her, you know what? The first time will be hard. And to your analogy, to your instructions this week, the first one will be hard. How's the next one going to be? Oh, it probably won't be so hard. Yeah. How's the one after that going to be? It'll probably be easier. Yeah. That's the whole thing. So the first one will be hard, but after that, they won't be quite as hard. Lara, what did you have?
Yeah, this on the communication, and it's interesting that Carl had talked about script, and this goes to my question is, and I would assume, but maybe I shouldn't assume, is that in terms of the communication aspect, that there's some sort of vertical integration in terms of the kids start to use at 14 years old, and does that go all the way up into your pre-professional and professional age groups? And I ask it because, and I think when we talked to Kat Mertz in the last our last episode, we talked about asking coaches, like, or asking goalkeepers, well, what's the terminology you use within your team? And this is kids that I coach sometimes, but I don't coach them in a team environment. I go, what do your coaches ask you to say when a ball gets flighted into the box, you decide you're not going to come for it, what terminology do you use? And they looked at me like they have no idea what I'm talking about. Where, you know, most kids are going to, we like away, some use clear, whatever it is. So it was just baffling to me that there wasn't that sort of integration that coaches or head coaches are helping them with their terminology.
Yeah, we have not just for communication, but we have a document that we give to the goalkeepers at the start of every cycle. It's a pathways to success document, and that covers, you know, the technical, the tactical, the emotional, the social, the physical, like the psychological, everything, every pillar of goalkeeping. We have a pathway to success document, and we highlight the whole document, but then we specifically circle the ones that are relevant to this age group. So they know when it comes to our mid-year revals, our weekly discussions, our end of year evals, they know exactly what we want them to be able to achieve. And then that's no different to on the communication side. They have I have a goalkeeper's Bible, which is a working document, right? You're always looking to try and find the most succinct or efficient way to deliver a message in the moment of battle, right? But it's a working document, but I think that pathways to success document is really being helpful for us as coaches, and also for them as players, because they see us 4 days a week. Well, there's a heck of a lot of time away from us that they can be getting better. And if they're understanding and studying the position without, you know, forgetting that they still are young men. And I think that's helpful. But I think it's on the front end of the process, it really helps them to really understand what we want, you know, because they can always revert back to it.
I like that idea.
Good. Good. George, go ahead.
I was just going to ask Carl, because when I was working with the USL, we were responsible for the player development plans. Is that document that you're talking about? That's what those academy players are receiving.
Similar. Yeah. So we have an IDP which we kind of hit with every single player in our academy, and that's, you know, a document that's just designed from the technical staff, but also the sports performance staff, mm-hmm. you know, the nutritionist and everything that goes with it. It's put into this IDP. Okay. But this is a document that's not specific to them, George. This is a document that's specific to our position, okay. and the position at each age group as they move through our process.
Gotcha.
So it highlights, you know, our, when we liaison, you know, communicate with our USL and our first team, you know, what do we want the goalkeepers to be at our first team? So, okay. So we work backwards from there. So we give them the document, but it is a working document, but we highlight specifically for, okay, here's the final product. What is specific for our U14s, our U15s, our U17s, and they get that at the start of the year. So at the start of the season, they'll get this document, and then they'll get an abbreviated one if they're able to move through the age groups.
Gotcha.
Carl, this is going to be off in a different direction. And it may not be just because of the numbers. You may not have the same situation specifically with goalkeepers, but I'm kind of curious in terms of the whole academy with the Revs. The dilemma between going as a player ages and develops and becomes accomplished and is a good player. When it comes down to college versus maybe USL or something like that, have you guys had to deal with that? Is that an issue with players that you have come across in the academy?
Yeah. I mean, it's so you're in, I think youth development, it's a player development pathway, right? And part of the player is the person. So you can't help but have an affection towards the individual, right? You get to know them, you get to know what their ambitions are. Mm-hmm. We had a young, not a goalkeeper, but our most recent one was a player called Colby Quinones. You might know his dad, Steve Quinones, is, you know, goalkeeper coach, you know, very respected coach in New England. Colby's he's a right back, and, you know, just being called into the Puerto Rican national team. He's just signed a USL deal. He had a full ride to Providence College, and he chose to go down the pathway of a USL. And I guess only time will tell, right? Whether that was the right decision for him. But the overriding factor, and speaking to the head coach of Providence, who I know really well, Craig, was you looked in the player's eyes and you could just see it was something that he really wanted to do. Right. And if a player has some indecision in there, it's probably not the right thing to do. Right. Because they're not going to be fully invested in that moment when they're going to have to jump in there and go, this is me. But you look at a kid who's like, you know, he's a smart kid. Everyone's given, you know, their 2 cents of information, but he really wanted to do it, you know, and listen, yeah. these contracts now are incorporating online education, so they're going to get a degree. MLS has a relationship with Southern New Hampshire.
Yeah.
So they're going to get further educated. But it's a really, we're in this, right, to develop the player as an MLS club, and obviously the Revs too, the USL is part of our pathway right now, and that's where it crosses over from the area of youth development to the business of professional sports.
Yeah. Good. I'm sorry. I thought, Lonnie, did I step in front of you? I thought you had something.
No, I'm good.
No? Okay. In terms of seeing kids move, kind of staying with that, with seeing kids move on, have there been kids that have come through the academy and during your time there that have moved on, or, and again, you don't need to say names, or who have, I guess you could just say failed, or just did not achieve, things like that. Has there been, you know, situations like that where you've got kids that, okay, you know what, we want this kid to develop, he's going to be on the first team, or we're going to try and sell this kid, or, and again, we're leaning now towards more to the, you know, the business side of things, but I just wondered if you had any experiences with that.
Yeah, no, again, we've had kids, you know, who were really high level MLS Academy goalkeepers and have went on to prestigious Division One, you know, institutions, and just haven't been able to you know, achieve what they wanted to achieve. And inevitably they come back and go, coach, like, it was a little harder, or it was different. And that, I think that's there's a lot to be said, right? Where kids come into your pathway at 13 and they leave at 19 or 20 years old, and you've had 5-6 years. But when I speak to the kids about like college, or it's almost beneficial for them, because you become less of a goalkeeper coach and just more of a goalkeeper trainer over time, just because they get used to your voice and they need this new experience. They need these new voice coming at them, right? And then when they do that, it's, oh, that voice is different to what I've just heard. And some people are a little more, you know, emotionally resilient, that to step outside of that bubble that they've known, albeit a really hard, demanding, competitive bubble, to now something where the coach maybe doesn't care enough, or the coach cares too much, or the coach has his favorite, and now that you're dealing with the staff dynamics of previous relationships, you know. And it's we've had them, and we've had them not too recently, where, you know, we've had kids come out of college and, you know, we've chose to not pick up their rights, and they've been picked up by other MLS programs and succeeded, and now they're in the professional pathway, whether it be USL or MLS, and that is a coach, and that, I'll be honest, that's where the emotional side of a coach comes in, because you're like, he should probably be with us, but he's not, you know? And it's like, hey, I'm not the one writing the checks. Like, you've got to detach yourself pretty quickly, right? But yeah, it's not as easy as what you think from the player and also from the coach's standpoint to detach yourself emotionally from someone who you've kind of worked day in, day out for 5-6 years for sure.
Yeah. What's the, and again, I understand that this may be on a case by case basis, but what's the policy given goalkeepers? There's probably, I think probably the physicality, the physical development, you know, once you get PHV that, you know, okay, now they can play up some years. But how often do you have goalkeepers that play up?
Yeah, I mean, for us, I think when I talked about the number of goalkeepers, mm-hmm. we always go low on the actual age group and then high on the number of young goalkeepers because we always like to push goalkeepers up. So I'll use the example, Elliot Jones for us. Elliot, you know, has gone now to Stamford. Elliot's played U19 football for the last 3 years as an 03. You know, he played U19 football for both of his 2017, both of his under 17 eligible ages and also his one U19. The young boy Matt Tibbetts that we have right now is an 04. He's again like a U17 footballer, but he now has played U19 football and now he's just been in with our USL for the last season. So he's another one. So yeah, we heavily do promote players, the goalkeepers playing up. Not if it's not beneficial for them, you know. I think that's an important distinction to make. But we'd much, with the addition of this USL Revs 2 program right now, it is really, really beneficial for us because if they can now, you know, go down the route of that online schooling and then they can train with the USL guys in the morning and then somehow have some interaction or contact time with their age group in the afternoon or an evening, you know, it is really, really important. And I think the goalkeepers learn from exposure too, right? We talk about that college goalkeeper and they get better as they get older, you know, thing, but it's the exposure. Like it's the exposure to minutes, which is important.
Yeah. Well, that actually, when you finish up with the word minutes, which is good because that's where I was going to go next. It's kind of like, okay, well, how difficult is it for you? Because obviously we all will agree that, you know, the game is a great teacher. How do you go about, especially with the younger age groups, you have more teams, so you'll have more potential goalkeeper minutes that you can pass out. But how do you deal with, let's go back to under 19s. How do you deal with the under 19 reserve keeper? How do they go about getting minutes?
That's where our age group, I mean, so the under 19 reserve keeper is actually probably going to play the most amount of minutes over anyone because the starting U19 goalkeeper will probably be playing or training with the USL guys. So that's the age group which is probably going to benefit the most, right? Because their nearest competitor is always going to be engaged.
Pretend they said under 17 then.
Under 17. so that's where it really helps, right? Because our starting U17 goalkeeper will get minutes, but he'll also get minutes up. So that having double or two or three goalkeepers who are really young in that age group, they're the ones who are always going to get given opportunities because there's always going to be, they can go up an age group or they can go down, right? And they can split time. And I think that the new system, the new MLS Next format that they've taken over from US Soccer, one of the rules or the guidelines that they put in place is they've given freedom now to players to play two different age groups on one given day. They've just given a minutes restriction. So now we are having goalkeepers, U15s can play, you know, a half a U15, but they can also play a half at the U17s later on in the day. And I think having that flexibility to do that is really important. And then also we have now the late developer designation for a kid who we feel has got really high potential, but just hasn't quite hit his stride yet from a growth spurt or a physical development standpoint. We can actually PhD. Move them, that Pete Heck velocity and move them down, right? So we can move them down an age group. So yes, they're playing down an age group, but really they're playing against players who are physically in the same category as them and they're getting minutes on that end. So now there's becoming a lot more flexibility in getting players minutes as the rules and the guidelines mm-hmm. develop.
I think that's tremendously beneficial because, again, if I'm going to play in one in the afternoon, I'm playing against kids that are bigger and faster than me. So that forces me to develop in some ways. And then in the second session, I can play against kids that I am not going to be dominated by physically. And so I think that's a tremendous feature to be able to do that, because that really, really will touch on the development of kids to be able to do that. They'll get tested in both ways, both in the physical and maybe in the more technical and tactical side of things.
No doubt.
No, very good, very good. All right. Okay, shall we open the can of worms? How do you go about training the Starfish K block save, whatever? Do you actually train that, or do you just say, okay, well, if you can't do anything else, you know, because again, you talked before about the three situations, you know, win the ball outright, smother it if it's 50-50, and then, you know, contain and wait. Now, that's what I always go, well, you're going to contain. If they're going to strike it, you're set for a shot. If they're not, in other words, if the ball is under the forward's foot, I'm waiting for that touch I can win. And if I can't win the touch, then I adjust and I go from there. But do you actually now provide instruction in terms of the block save?
Yeah. I think Jason alluded to the opportunity that some of the MLS Academy coaches had last year when we visited Germany with the DFB and spent a week there in the kind of under Mark Ziegler, who's the head of goalkeeper development in Germany, the DFB. They broke it down, and we have to a certain extent as well, but they broke it down real specific in terms of distance and what technique is associated with the distance that they are. So anything under a meter from the ball was really narrow, compact, you know, getting close to the ball, eliminating the kind of the trajectory of the ball going over them, but also reducing your reaction time. You're a little bit more compact, a little narrower to the ball. And then anything past that, you know, it's called like a bigger block where you're a little bit more expansive. But for us, it's, I think one of the things we're talking about when we're blocking as well is it's not so much, well, it is obviously the distance that you and the decision that a goalkeeper, can they impact the ball, mm-hmm. but it all might be what else is around them, whereabouts is the ball coming from.
As I alluded to, if the ball's under me, I'm not striking it at goal, but if the ball's out in front of me, then I can strike it. And the goalkeeper has to process that information as well.
And you guys might have seen this as well. Something that really fascinates me right now is the when goalkeepers are retreating to give themselves more time to see the ball, right? Like when I was growing up, I first started coaching, it was I'll paint the picture. You know, the ball's going to the end line, it's going to be cut back to 10 yards out. Well, naturally, a goalkeeper's starting position, if it's a right-footed service, is going to be, you know, off their post, looking to protect the space in front of them and manage the space in front of them too, because the ball's not going to go in the near post. But then this is why I love the game, right? Because it's ever evolving, but you go out and you put the attacker under pressure. Mm. Well, if that ball's getting cut back, 9 times out of 10, the attacker's going to have defenders around them. Because they've got defenders around them, they know he's going to hit the ball first time. He's not really looking where the goalkeeper is. He's already made the mind up. The ball's going to come to me. I'm going to hit it first time. He's already made his mind up about where he's going to get that shot away. So if a goalkeeper is knowing the psychology of the attacker in that moment, that he's not really looking at me, and if he's not looking at me, I can't really affect his decision. So what's best for me? Is it to go out there and just get caught in a dead space? Or is it now, all right, because he's not having any, you know, thoughts about what I'm doing, I might retreat to my line, give myself more time to make the save. And everyone's like, well, you've given a bigger area to hit, but he's not looking at me in the first place, right? So that this is where the block, you go out there if you can impact the moment, the distance. But if you can't affect it, give yourself more time to see the ball. And it's a really hot topic right now, you know, and I'm not saying it's what I do or you do, but.
No, I would argue physically that the amount of time you gain is irrelevant, because again, the ball is traveling from a penalty kick. It gets to the goal in about 500 microseconds and your reaction time is about 700 microseconds. So by retreating a step or two, I think what you gain is insignificant. I think, again, we talked earlier about reading. The biggest thing is reading. And if you can read that forward, you know, where are his hips? Where's his support foot? His support foot is pointing in this direction. So I think he's going to go to that direction, things like that. I think those things are the bigger factor. And again, I don't think that is either here or there about the positioning as much as reading, and that I think is the real relevant point to that. But again, I'm opinionated. George, you got something?
Carl, a couple of things. I think one of the most important points that you mentioned in regards to that cutback situation, because again, I look at it as a defender too. If the distance is too great, why would you have a defender run out there? Because they're not going to be able to impact the play. You know what I mean? So I think that the distance that we're covering is going to be significant in that situation as well.
Yep.
But another thing that I wanted to ask was, did Ziegler in any shape or form discuss the size of the goalkeeper? Because we had John Bush on, and John obviously is short like myself. Well, most of us here except Shooky. He was saying that, listen, if we're going to go into that blocking spread technique, it's going to make me even smaller. So does the size have any influence in regards to that save or using that technique?
I mean, if you look at the German goalkeeper, the man mountains, right? Like he did say that the size of the goalkeeper at the national team level is not really a concern of them because they don't have anybody smaller than 6'3". So, but he did say though that when they do their talent ID days, they don't put an emphasis on size. They put an emphasis on what's their unique characteristics. And that was the word that he talked about. What's their one? They talked about a physical presence, how efficient they are in moving. They talked about they defined it like robustness, right? In terms of a characteristic of them, but it was what was their unique characteristic that made them just a little different. And he did say though that they love to take credit for Manuel Neuer, but they have absolutely no responsibility for what he is. Like he is, if you look at the goalkeepers that they have, they said, we really can't, because he is about as unique of a player as they've ever seen. And he just says like, our goalkeeper school can take credit for a lot of high-end goalkeepers, but in this room, he said that we can't take any credit for Manuel Neuer, just because he was a different cat right from, 12, 13. And listen, he's adapted some of their teachings and methodology. Of course he would, but he's not someone who they can take credit for, you know?
Yeah. It's my guy. Cool.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Lotto, what have you got?
And I think maybe a synopsis of this when we work with our goalkeepers is allowing our goalkeepers to create their own style within the framework of what we believe is functionally correct, technically correct, whatever it is. So, in that situation is my first thing with those kids is, they commit to one thing or the other, and they get themselves in a no man's land or in a position where it's going to be really difficult to make a save no matter what they do. They're either standing on their line or with their heels in the goal. And if they deflect a ball 99 times out of 100, it's going in the goal, in the roof or in the side, or they go too much towards the striker where the striker just rolls a foot over the ball and, and can beat him. And again, it depends on the level. So, my comment is just, let's first start with put yourself in a position that gives you a chance to make a save. And then we can refine it. Then we can decide, do we drop step? Do we put pressure? Do we smother? Do we block? Do we do whatever? But we have to at least get ourselves in a position that we can make the save. And then as far as the German thing goes, I think the rule is when a goalkeeper walks into a soccer shop, unless you're over 6 feet or your dad is over 6 foot tall, they don't allow you to buy a pair of goalkeeper gloves, period.
it was interesting though, when we talked about that situation and when you're saying, Bill, like the time, like, is it worth of note that the time that they're going to gain? But we also talk about the mindset of a goalkeeper. Like if a goalkeeper thinks this is going to give him a better chance to make a save.
Fair enough.
Is that going to give him like, to try and get someone to do something that they don't fundamentally believe in or they don't think is going to give them a benefit is almost going to be a detriment on the other side, right? Whereas if a goalkeeper thinks, I'm going to drop myself a yard and get myself set, I'm going to give myself this much more time, I'm gonna have more time to make a save, you know, like, and it's the training mindset as well. But
if they believe it's going to work better for them, then you're correct. I mean, there has to be buy-in from the goalkeeper, and if the goalkeeper feels, as you said, dropping back is going to give me more time, whether it's an actuality or not, if that makes them a better goalkeeper, then by all means do that, to be the better goalkeeper, to make that
understand safe. both sides of the argument. And
fair enough.
As long as
Bill, Dr. Bill doesn't know anything about mindset.
I know about yours, Lotto. I know about yours. good. Carl, this has been great. We're running over an hour, but this has been great. Fellas, anything
I
more?
I can talk goalkeeping all day. Don't worry.
I know. We all could. Fellas, anything else specific for Carl?
Nah, Carl, listen, man, I'm just so psyched we had you on. A couple of takeaways for me, which is right up my alley is, you mentioned earlier in the podcast that, when you're training, you're training the game. You're not just training the activity. And I think that also becomes something that is so essential to developing our goalkeepers, is that when you're doing something, you just can't look at it from that exercise standpoint. You got to look beyond. So you got to think the bigger picture. So I thought that was fantastic, man. And again, just great to catch up to you.
Yeah, no, I would echo. I mean, I think the point you made earlier about the kind of like the delay in the specialization of a goalkeeper, but so that they learn the game, that to me is one of the biggest things that I would just always get frustrated dealing with a goalkeeper that had been a goalkeeper forever and they've got no idea about the game, or they can't read a player because they don't know. I think that's you're doing the goalkeepers a good service by doing that.
No, and I think I'll be throwing out that toast activity to a few players with the upcoming holidays. And with the wonder of social media, I'll see if I can make it blow up, and we'll give you a little bit of credit the first time
I use it. Courtesy of Spratt.
And maybe
if it's yours, and after that it's mine.
We need to do it on our Instagram and social network channels with the
we're all giving a toast.
Oh, I just want to see the YouTube of the failed goalkeeper toasts.
Yeah. You mean the one that drops the glass?
Yeah. Carl, great. Thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it. It's been tremendous. Great fun.
Yeah, thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you so much for the opportunity, boys.
All righty.
We hope you enjoyed that episode at the Goalkeeper Roundtable. If you'd like to reach out with suggestions, comments, or questions, all of our email addresses are available in the show description. If you like the show, we'd love for you to subscribe to it, but also share it in social media platforms or with any other goalkeeper or coach who may find value in it. We hope you turn in to the next Goalkeeper Roundtable.